Pirate in the West Gate. The story of CBC Radio Clonmel. Presented by John Ryan and Jimmy Williams.
Until July 20th, 1989, the only legal radio in Ireland was controlled by RTE. However, a plethora of pirate stations came on air in the late 1970s and the early 1980s. By the mid-80s, pirate radio in Ireland was flourishing, mainly due to the past lax enforcement, the willingness of some to bravely venture into an unknown world of broadcasting and thereby, in the eyes of the state, break the law, and added to this, the interest the public had in hearing their own local station, bringing them their news from their community. These stations attracted many loyal listeners. By the late 1980s, it was estimated that there were more than 74 stations operating countrywide. Today, we remember one of them, our own CBC Radio Clonmel. CBC. Clonmel had its first taste of its own local radio station back in the summer of 1978, when the Clonmel Express newspaper bought a small transmitter and began broadcasting at weekends in the town area. In August 1980, Jerry Gannon started Radio Carrick in his garage at his home in Dunbane. Meanwhile, back in Clonmel at that time, Johnny Williamson started CLR, Clonmel Local Radio, at his house in Ferry House. The amalgamation of CLR and Radio Carrick saw the birth of CBC. CBC Radio broadcasts from its studio in the iconic West Gate in Clonmel on November 14th, 1981, and continued until its close down on December 31st, 1988. In those 7 years, more than 100 people contributed to its success, bringing local radio to the people of South Tipperary. The vast majority of these were volunteers who gave freely of their time to bring us programmes as varied as gardening advice, religion, legal advice, politics, movie reviews, country and western and classical music, and much more, which added to the already established daily schedule on the station. Others just answered the phones during the busy shows or helped out at outside broadcasts, or indeed worked behind the scenes. For the listeners to be able to tune into their own local station and hear about events that affected them, local news and notices, requests and hearing people that they could meet on the street at any time, this new local radio concept was proving very popular.
There you go, the first record they played on CBC way back on the 14th of November in 1981. Jerry Gannon behind the mixing desk.
There she is. Thanks very much. That's Dick Beattie opening the champagne. Now, during the course of the afternoon, we'll be introducing to you some of the presenters that you'll be able to hear during the coming weeks. Now, since yesterday and the day before, we've been having messages of congratulations. This one says, congratulations on your success. It says, congratulations on your achievement. All the best. And this comes from Tony Fitzgerald of Fitzgibbon Electrical Services Limited. And there's also a little something in there which will help go towards the champagne. There's another couple of cards here. This one says, best of luck to CBC on the 14th of November from the Sound Centre and the Music Centre of Clonmel. There's one or two more. We'll get to them during the course of the afternoon. In the eye of the storm. Here with the time at just 19 minutes after 12 o'clock. I wonder if you can hear me, because I can barely hear myself. But never mind, we're all having a great time here. We got champagne and everything. And everybody who has had anything to do with CBC over the past couple of months are all here, and they're all after quietening down considerably right this minute. We've had all the tradesmen who helped put CBC on the air and build the studio, all the management staff, presenters, the whole gang. We're all here. Now, we have another congratulations card to CBC. It says, congratulations to Johnny, that's Johnny Williamson, and his colleagues in CBC. And this comes from Mary B. O'Donoghue. We'll also have a programme on Mick Delahunty, and we have one or two other things in the can, as they say, as well. Incidentally, I think I forgot to introduce myself. My name is Jerry Gannon, and this is one of the pieces of music you'll be hearing now and again throughout the programmes here on CBC. It's what we call a jingle.
There we heard Jimmy Williams on the last Saturday afternoon show on the station, which went out on New Year's Eve between 3 and 6pm. And that led into the very first broadcast back in 1981, introduced by the then station managing director, Jerry Gannon. During this programme, you will hear the name Jerry Gannon quite a few times. As people remember, it was he who convinced them to take those tentative steps into the world of broadcasting. Even if they had no real interest in becoming involved in radio, Jerry gave them the confidence to believe in themselves and the opportunity to try it out. At the age of 28, Jerry Gannon was one of the youngest managing directors of any radio station in the country when he started CBC in 1981. His youth, enthusiasm and let's do this attitude was the driving force behind CBC Radio and its success.
Well, Radio Carrick began as an idea that I had encountered when I was working with Shoreside Radio in Waterford. And I had started to understand how local radio could be beneficial for a community. And I wanted to try some ideas. And the guy who owned the station didn't want to spend any money. So I decided, well, bugger you, I'll start my own station and try out these ideas. So I went to three people in Carrick-on-Shore, Christy Butler, Tony Kehoe, and Franco Bove. And they each gave me £500, and I built a radio station in the garage of my house at 13 Dunbayne. And then I could try out all of these ideas. And I wasn't a bit surprised, but these ideas began to work because suddenly the community had an idea of what it was and what it looked like and what it sounded like. So we had people like Peg Power, Pat O'Regan, Paul Byrne, who's now managing Radio Kerry, and a number of others who contributed to the program. And once I knew that that was going to succeed, I then set about bringing it to a bigger audience, and the next logical step was to go to Clonmel. But there was a broken Clonmel called Johnny Williamson who already had something on the air, and I wasn't quite certain that the something was, you know, the way to go. I thought we could do better. And I wanted to make it a truly community-based radio station by establishing a co-op, a cooperative. And I remember holding a public meeting in Hearn's Hotel one night, several months in advance of we actually getting going, to discuss the idea of forming a cooperative. And I was dissuaded from that particular route by certain sections of the business community who actually wanted to become involved and didn't want the great unwashed to have participation in this. So I was just keen to get a good radio station on air, so we set up a company with a board. On the board was the two Riley brothers who were solicitors, Christy Butler, John Ryan, myself, Johnny Williamson. We kind of rolled Johnny's operation into ours. We got access to the West Gate. I borrowed a Hi-Ace van from a friend of mine. I drove all over the UK visiting radio stations, buying up surplus bits of equipment. In the course of my journey through the UK, I came across a former technician for the BBC who was spent more time in a pub than he did anywhere else, paid his ferry fare to come to Clonmel to help us get set up. And rounded up a bunch of broadcasters from Radio Carrick, a few that Johnny had on board, and a few others, and we launched in
14th of November
1981. That's the one. Yep. And we went to air at noon, as I recall. And at about 1:30, I remember walking down the street of Clonmel, wondering why nobody appeared to be listening to the radio station. They all seemed to be going about their business. Anyway, we went on air, and you know, we went along fine. We were doing okay. We were doing some good programs. Presenters were finding their feet. They were becoming more skilled. Production values, predominantly under Pat O'Regan, were becoming much better. We were selling a bit of advertising, but not quite enough. And then I can't remember whether it was that December or January when we had that massive snowfall and the entire valley was snowed in, and that's when we came into our own, because we were the only form of communication that was open. And I remember being on the phone to the then Speaker of the Parliament, Sean Tracy, and arranging for a Defence Force helicopter to drop bales of hay to stranded sheep out in the Nair, and to pick up pregnant women to drop them to hospital and the likes of that. And it was a heady time, that was. And I recall that most of our presenters stayed in the station overnight, predominantly because they couldn't get home, they couldn't get out. But it was the making of us, and that brought us to a much wider audience. And I think it also helped to reinforce in the eyes of all of our presenters that this just wasn't a joyride. We were providing a valuable service to the people of South Tipperary. So it was great, you know. There were heady times, there were tough times. I think we had a staff of about 14 at the time. We were the first radio station in Ireland, as I understand it, where our employees paid income tax. We had everything that was legit except that bit of paper that said we were licensed to broadcast.
Final night of broadcasting, owner of CLR, Johnny Williamson, had a chat in studio with Tim Cooney.
Mind you, you might remember the CLR below you came down one day.
I have a recollection of trying to climb up in a tower or a castle.
No, the gate in the back. There was down in the flat in the back, and we were in the kitchen.
Oh, that's right, yes. I think the transmitter was in the fridge or somewhere, was it?
The transmitter was up in the window alongside it, and that's right. Jimmy was saying there was a tinfoil or something. That was around the transmitter. To stop the sound of the transmitter going back out over the microphone.
Oh, yes.
And there was carpet on the wall.
Oh, yes.
And we used to climb in over a table because there was a sink. We were inside the kitchen, there was a sink. And there was also a fella staying there as well. It'd be very funny, he'd be sitting down having his tea or having his lunch, and the lads would be passing in to do the programme, so the lads would be passing out. It was pretty well like Bally McGash radio.
Yeah, and if people only knew.
Yeah.
If people only knew.
And it was on from I was at 10 o'clock in the morning till about 6. And I remember Morris Young used to do 10 to 12. I used to do 12 to 2. And I was also working at the same time. So therefore, the night before, I'd record the first hour. And if I was late coming out of work, which I was often late coming out, the tape had run out by the time I was going down along the driveway.
Yeah.
And I had to rush in. And while I was eating my lunch, I'd be on the air at the same time until 2 o'clock. Then I'd... Paul Growley used to come on from 2 to 4 and someone else from 4 to 6. And the usual weekends, but you'd always have the problems, like if fellas couldn't turn up or if some fellas supposed to come up. There's always, a lot of fellas don't realise, especially if you're running the station.
That's right, yeah.
It's grand, some fellas ring up like at 5 to 7 if they're on at 7 and say they can't come in. And if you're running maybe with just 4 lads and the fellow who's on before has to get away, it looks very bad to have a blank programme in the minute.
That's right.
In the middle of it. So it was very, very difficult run. That's probably why I decided it was easier to join CBC. There was a couple of us trying to run it rather than do it yourself. You just couldn't do it, you know.
It's
an impossible task.
No. What do you think about local radio now?
Well, I think it's an important thing to have, you know, because as somebody was saying there, like that if you want something on the paper, well, you've got to wait for a certain day to bring it out.
Right.
If you want it on the radio, well, if you ring up, you'll have it on maybe 5 minutes later.
Yes.
You know, when the things happen, like if something happens of a Monday, well, CBC can report it.
Mm.
As somebody said today about the snows, and if the snow happened on Sunday and fellas having problems, well, they ring up the station. Or the same way with the bad weather, like if the schools, you'd ring up whether the schools were open or whether they were closed. So instead of, if the school has no phone, well, you can't ring them. You got to drive down and find out it's not on. So if it's on the radio, they say that a certain school is closed.
But what do you think about it now? Looking back, what would you have to say about local radio here in Clonmel and in the South Tipperary area?
With CBC, like,
yeah.
I think CBC was a great station, you know, because as I say, I had one below, and everybody complains about everything and this and that, maybe this fella and that fella. But it's very difficult to run a station. To get the, you know, to get what you want. And I reckon CBC did a very good job.
Mm.
Like, there's a few good presenters on CBC, very good presenters.
Mm.
Might mention one, Patricia Cantwell. It would be hard to get someone nationally as good. And, you know, local radio as well, I also feel that, you know, you don't have to be as polished as fellas make out you should be. Because if you notice, most of the fellas on the local radio that would be popular, like yourself, might I add, you did yet. Like yourself.
There's a fly after going the wrong way.
Is it down to earth, fella? If you're down to earth, then you can talk to people. That's all you want to be able to do.
Yeah.
Like, if you're up above and the other fellas are below, well, the waveband is too wide, isn't it?
Right. Right, Johnny, it's 10 o'clock, and you're going doing a little bit of work tonight, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Are you?
Yeah.
keep the home fires burning. We'd like to wish you the best of luck indeed, Johnny, in 1989.
Of course, starting your radio career today can be difficult, but back in the early 1980s, it was a little easier, if not sometimes accidental. Richie Anderson explains.
I started with Brendan Mahoney on a Sunday morning answering the phones. That was my job for the first, we said the first 4 or 5 weeks. So Brendan in to say that he was going on holidays. And who was actually doing the show before Brendan was Owen Ryan. And I was asked to sit in for Brendan for 2 weeks while he was on holidays. Now, I hadn't a clue about equipment. I hadn't an idea. But Mr. Ryan was to show me the equipment. So I got behind the mixing desk with Mr. Ryan at about 5 minutes before I went on air, 11 o'clock. And he looked at all the gadgets and said, you push that one up for this one, you push that one up for the other one, you twist that here, you get the biro in and you pull the half twist back on the tape. And good luck, I'll see you next week. That was my introduction to CBC Radio. And you know, so I got through it. A lot of cock-ups, but I got through it. And from that then I took off, I got a Tuesday night show called Remember When.
If you have no interest in presenting a show yourself, it seems to seek you out. Dennis O'Sullivan spent over 30 years endearing himself on radio to the people of Tipperary. And again, it all started with a chance remark.
I initially had no interest in getting involved in radio. I always loved radio. Absolutely loved radio because it was only radio when I was growing up. And it was radio airing. It wasn't RTE or anything like that. And when I came into, even before I came into my teens, when I was about 9 or 10 or 11, or 11 years of age, Elvis Presley hit the scene. Like most youngsters then, we were into pop music. Popular music up to then would be Frankie Lane and people like that. But Elvis changed all that. And I was always we used to listen to Dinjo take the floor on the radio as well and enjoy it. But local radio was something was never dreamt of. And in the 1980s, local radio, this was around the 1980s, I think, John, you might know more than I do about that, but the first person I ever heard on local radio was Johnny Williamson here in Clonmel. And then there was other people on it as well. I think Joe Malley had a programme on it and other voices. And I was fascinated with this and delighted with it, absolutely delighted with it, but no dream at all and certainly no intention of getting involved behind a microphone. I was heavily involved with the Clonmel Theatre Guild in drama, and that's where my interest lay. But I happened to be walking up the town in Clonmel in very early Lent in 1983. And who did I see coming against me? Only Jerry Gannon. Now, I had got to know Jerry because when the Theatre Guild were doing a play, I'd be dispatched to do a bit of promotion. And Jerry was always very kind. He said, yeah, come up and do a little bit of an interview. And I didn't mind that because I was only answering questions, and I was answering questions about what I knew about a play that I was in or a play somebody else was in. I was at rehearsals and I knew all about it. But my involvement I never saw any further than that. But anyway, I saw Jerry coming against me, and I called him and I said, Jerry, you know, on Easter Sunday, 1983, coming up is Mick De La Hunty's 50th anniversary as a band leader. I said, I hope you're going to recognise that on radio on Easter Sunday. And quick as a wink, Jerry said, I'll tell you what, Dennis, I'll put it out if you do it. How do you mean if I do it? If you present it. Oh, geez, there, Jerry. I was never behind a microphone except to be interviewed. And I said, then not very often. I don't know the first thing about radio. Well, he said, that's the deal now. And he was making up his mind literally in seconds. That's the deal, he said. You go and you research it. You write a script. Find whatever music you can. And I'll produce it. And we'll record it and we'll put it out on Easter Sunday. Oh, God, I said, that's the deal, Dennis. If you want it done, it'll be done. But it'll be done by yourself. Give me 24 hours. So thought over it anyway. Went off and I had a chat with Paddy De La Hunty, Mick's brother. I knew from stories when I'd meet Paddy. Paddy was married to an aunt of mine. And when I'd meet Paddy, I used to love the stories that he had from the good old days of the band and everything else. I said, look, I've been asked to do this for the 50th anniversary of Mick's 50th anniversary as a band leader. And Paddy said, oh, sure, you want to know, I'll tell you, whatever. So I rang Jerry Gannon the following day and I said, right, Jerry, you're on for that. So I had most of Lent to get it together. And I worked day and night at it, spoke to a number of people, including Mick himself, put the script together. And it went out on Easter Sunday 1983. When I was in the studio recording it, Jerry said, what are we going to call this? Oh, I said, I don't know, Mick De La Hunty Radio Special. No. He said, you remember when you were growing up, did you do 20 Years of Growing, that book? Oh, I said, I did. Well, he said, what about 60 Years of Blown? I said, that's brilliant, 60 Years of Blown. And I went out to 60 Years of Blown. I never thought any more of it. I was sitting at home very proud on the Easter Sunday afternoon when I went out.
In the Westgate, the story of CBC Radio Clonmel.
Now, throughout this programme, we're going to endeavour to play a couple of songs. These are actual records that were played on CBC Radio back in the day. We've kept them safely stored away in a box for a day like today. And they may be a bit scratchy and one or two of them might jump. But we thought, to keep things as original as possible for this programme, that we'd bring one or two of them out and play them for you today. Starting us off, here's Anne Murray, and this is 45 Years From Now.
Where the earth shows its bones of wind-broken stones, and the sea and the sky are one. I'm caught out of time, and my blood speaks in rhyme. I'm running out in the sun. With God in the trees, I'm weak in the knees, and the sky is a painful blue. I'd like to look around, but all I see is you. And I just want to hold you closer than I've ever held anyone before. You say you've had a lot of strife and you're through with life. Tell me, what's it all for? After all these years, you think that I could find a way. From now, some city lights still soften the night. Do you think that the air is clear? I'm sitting with friends, but it don't make sense because I'm anywhere else but here. They've got something to say, but I'm so far away that I don't know who I'm talking to. Just walked in the door and all I see is you. And I just want to hold you closer than I've ever held anyone before. You see, you've had a lot of strife and you're through with life. Tell me, what's it all for? Stories end. Maybe after the show he'll ask me to go out with him for a drink or two. A smile lights his eyes, but all I see is you.
Now.
Church in the Westgate, the story of CBC Radio Clonmel.
In the affectionately known pirate days, you could pop in for a chat with the station manager, and if your diction was good, you could end up reading the news.
I got involved originally because a friend of mine had been there since the beginning, Liam Malumby, and Liam suggested that I should come up and talk to Jerry Gannon, who was the manager of the station at the time. And I went up and I spoke to Jerry, and Jerry said, would you like to come in and read the news? And so I read the news for, I think, about 2 months. And after that, Jerry said, would you like a daily programme? And that was how I came to do the 2 to 3 slot every day. And I did that from around 1981, I think it was. I wasn't there at the very beginning, but there were marvellous years. I loved every minute of my time there. And it was such a different time for radio, because at that time, we virtually could do what we liked on air. I mean, in a sense, it was a dangerous weapon that we had, because there were no constraints and there was very little in the way of regulation. And I remember we say covering the last abortion referendum, and we would have people in coming up to the referendum. We'd have people in every week talking about it. But there was no such thing as having to get an absolute 50-50 split of opinion or anything like that. So one day you might be talking about abortion, the next it might be flower arranging, the next day it would be somebody in from the ICA. And we were, anyone who presented a programme was their own producer, researcher, everything. So until 1:55 every day, you never actually knew whether your guest was going to arrive or not, as the case might be. But it was really a marvellous time, and I loved every minute of it. And I met marvellous people, both interviewing people and also the people I worked with, because there was such a diverse group of people from all walks of life. And that's, I think, that mix, that eclectic mix, that you wouldn't get in any other job. And it was like a big family, and it was fun more than anything else. You would have actually paid to have worked there. And I mean, none of us were paid very much, as you very well know. You were my engineer for many years. But it didn't matter, because they were just marvellous times.
That was Patricia Cantwell, presenter of the Daily Magazine show from 2 to 3pm. It wasn't all music and chat. A bit of fun and quizzical happenings on a Sunday afternoon was always welcome. In fact, this show is how I accidentally became involved in radio. Billy McLellan was the ideal quizmaster.
The phone-in quiz programme, sure, it was great fun. And we had a really enthusiastic band of what you might say regular participants. One thing we did, and I'm sure you remember it, was the jumble word challenge, where the listener was asked to form a mystery word from a mixture of letters. So I'd read out a few questions, and the first letter of each correct answer would be a letter in the mystery word. The challenge to the listener was to form that word and be the first to phone in the correct answer. So one particular Sunday, I decided to lay down a big challenge. The mystery word would contain 20 letters, no less. The word was micro-miniaturisation, and in no time at all, we got a correct answer from a person called Jonathan Ryan from St. Patrick's Well. I was so impressed, I called out to his house to meet him. Now, wouldn't that be you?
That would be me. And thus started my life in radio.
And then you came into CBC, and everybody was mad about you. I must mention the late Tommy Cunningham. Tommy operated the sound desk for me for most of the quiz shows, and he was marvellous. Marvellous and enthusiastic. Can I just mention something about computers, which is quite amazing. During the year CBC was in operation, that was when, John?
81 to 88,
yeah. Sean Hackett sold the Atari computer, and Marion's bookshop sold the Commodore computer.
Yes.
I think it was called the Commodore 64.
Correct.
There was another one called the VIC-20. You remember them,
don't
you?
I do indeed, yes.
Yeah. Well, the Commodores ran on a language called BASIC, and if you remember, it had a port for tape cassettes that you plugged in. So one Sunday, I advised listeners with computers that I would send out a signal on the following Sunday so that they could record on a cassette tape. The signal sounded roughly like the sound of a fax machine, boo, 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 that kind of two-tone thing. On it was a question, what is the capital of France? Before the end of the programme, I was astonished to get 5 phone calls giving me the answer, Paris. So it just goes to show that long before Bill Gates and Steve Jobs became household names, the computer age in South Tipperary was in full swing.
Late in the evening, many listeners settled down to listen to the best in country and Irish, as well as local talent, with Timmy Cooney, assisted by Noreen Butler. This piece is from 1988, the last show when Tim and Peg Power had a little chat about the show.
I got a liking for all the old Irish songs.
But how did that bring you into radio when CBC started up? Did you feel that you wanted to present programmes?
I didn't. Believe it or not, the first thing, if somebody said to me 7.5 years ago, you will be presenting a programme on CBC, I'd be saying, look, go way up there to St. Luke's for yourself, and they'll treat you for that complaint and so on. Because I never even thought of it. But what I always wanted to do, I suppose maybe it was from organising bookings in a band and going out and playing and maybe playing at this and playing at that, and maybe helping out in our shows and concerts and things like that. I kind of got a flair for that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt, well, wouldn't it be nice now maybe to put a programme together, mm-hmm. like of songs that I like, and pick out records and mm-hmm. get somebody to play them. And I did that here with Paul Burton, believe it or not, the first time I ever got an opportunity to do that. And I asked Paul to include, because Paul was a little bit pop orientated.
Yes.
You know, I'd been in the
DJ,
DJ, young fella at the time.
Yeah.
And I asked him would he play a couple of these ones and these ones and these ones, and he said yeah. And there was a great reaction, sort of. Even Paul himself would admit that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only from the older listeners, really.
Did you find, Timmy, that presenting your own programme, as you have done for the past 7 years or so, that it was new to people to be hearing these kind of songs? Was it that they weren't getting enough airing on the national radio?
No, they weren't. Absolutely not. Because when I started, it was because of test transmissions that I happened to be on the airwaves at all. I was asked to sit in here after broadcasting hours to play a couple of songs.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter what kind of songs, so that they could adjust the transmitters. And as it happened, there were these exactly the records that I would play, and I felt that people, if they were listening. So people said, I've got to help you with grand music. But Jerry asked me then, well, he said to me very reluctantly that you know, he'd let me do a programme. And I mean very reluctantly. He didn't want me. He felt that I hadn't no idea.
I hadn't the style.
I was completely out the window. But mm-hmm. I said to him, will you let me do one? And if it doesn't work out, that'll be the end of it.
Right.
Because I felt there was something there that I should go and look, explore.
Right.
So I did, and sure, I mean, without service, I couldn't get over it. I was.
They got so fond of you, Timmy.
People were ringing up, and they were saying, will you play this one, and will you play that one, and don't forget Mary, and don't forget me and Mother, and don't. And I'd meet people down the street, and I wonder about who they'd be, and they were listening last night, and how they used to know me, and just from the radio, I don't know. The people, the audience that I was playing to, were out working, or maybe they just hadn't the time. Or maybe, you know, you get a very, very small percentage of calls that you're getting. Because everybody in the night time had time to sit down and relax and listen to the radio or watch the television.
And you knew what they wanted
and
to
I
hear.
And I had an idea that the old Irish songs and the old music was basically...
what they wanted.
And the not so old stuff. The new artists, like people like Daniel O'Donnell and people like Paddy O'Brien, people like the Bards and all, and they were all starting off. mm-hmm. and I played them, and they were acceptable. So
I noticed this from calls that we get in the normal way in the daytime. You seem to be in touch with all these people now, the modern Irish artists, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, like Daniel O'Donnell and those. Do you find that those people themselves appreciated what you were doing and playing their particular music?
I never realised it, actually. You see, I'm not a very sort of a person that likes, you know, talking about myself, really. It's just something that I do and play a song. If somebody brings me in a tape and I don't like it, mm-hmm. you know, I'll
you
play it.
Well, you
no,
will
play it,
will you?
Because
yeah.
there is always somebody out there that will like it.
I see. Yeah.
And, you know, if they go to the trouble, like somebody will go down to Des's studio in Carrick, and then they'll spend a couple of hundred pounds recording an album, and someone will bring it in here, and I might say, oh, yeah, that's right. I mean,
that's
wouldn't like that.
Yeah.
But all I'd be doing, really, is comparing them with some other good mm-hmm. artists with maybe lots of money and better facilities mm-hmm. and all that. So, just more often than not, the ones that I play that I mightn't like myself are the ones that would be very, very,
very popular.
Since I came to the local radio here, to CBC Radio, I've met, friends with a capital F, people that I will always remember. And I mean, it's 7 years of my life that I'll always remember. That I'll always remember the time that I spent here in the Westgate among the people. I did have arguments and rows and things. It happens, of course, in any place. But I got a lot of pleasure out of doing things for people to try and make up for what they've done for me. And as I say, I wouldn't be running off to the bank with a big bag full of money. But what I have inside my head and in my heart for the people that was associated with the station, and yourself included, I've walked along, I've been a long time around on the road, Peg, and I'm not just saying this because you're here and because it's sort of a nostalgic, sentimental occasion. It's the truth, and a finer person I've never worked with than yourself. You're actually a credit to any organisation, and I know that you're sick of listening to people heaping praise on you, but I am saying that from the bottom of my heart. You've off the air and on the air, you're one of nature's ladies, and I think, Peg, that, you know, there's great credit due to you for what you've done. For us here, for me personally, and indeed for the people of Clonmel, and we owe you a great debt. So don't say to me, I never got paid. I did get paid.
Thank you very much, Timmy. Look, you're after turning the tables on me now. I came here to thank you, and we'll leave it at that.
Very well.
Thank you very much, Timmy. And get on with your nice music, because we have only a little over half an hour left.
That's right, gentlemen, we have a lot to do. Thank you very much, Peg.
CBC had two main magazine-type shows on air Monday to Friday, the Peg Power Hour between 11 a.m. and noon, and Patricia Cantwell from 2 to 3. And we are privileged to have acquired a copy of a full show dedicated to the great musician Mick Delahunty, who joined Patricia Cantwell in the Westgate in 1983, the year in which he and his band celebrated 50 years in show business.
As a child growing up in Clonmel, I remember very well this particular guest name being mentioned with great admiration and pride, and indeed reverence. Mick Delahunty, you're welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Patricia.
Well, Mick, I suppose you're always asked, how did you get started in the business? But could we go back a little bit further? Did you grow up in a very musical family?
Not really, no. Well, it has been asked and quoted over radio and that, the same thing. But we weren't a musical family to that extent. Music in the way that there was always music in the house, or mother's relations down in Carrick and Shore, Mike Weston, his sons and that, they always had music in the house, but that's about the only way I could say there was a musical family.
Yes.
And they were about, I think, well, there'd be my third cousins out, John, Tom and his brothers. That was the music that we started off with when we were kids.
Right.
Which I spoke about recently. Now, that would be the musical.
And did you play any instruments, or what stage did you get the interest in music?
Well, I always had it since then. I always had the music interesting, because we were listening to it, well, once a month at least.
Yes.
Then we had records at home. The mother was the demon for collecting all the records. We had John McCormick, yes, and all those, well, a lot of the songs that you hear now on the radio from Tommy O'Brien, my very good friend there, I listen to him quite often. And Cayley music, she was mad about Cayley music, so I came into the music scene through the Cayley effort. And gradually, well, the dance came along, you know, the ballroom dancing as such at that time. And I started the band with them playing saxophone, cornet and saxophone.
Right. Now tell me about your first band, Mick.
Well, the first band, of course, was, as we say, a make-yours-up band, because it was a special occasion. And that was for a dance out in Care on Easter Sunday night. Well, that was the 50th anniversary ball we had in the, Circles ballroom.
A couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, a few weeks ago. 50 years ago, I put that band together. Yes. It consisted of a piano, fiddle, banjo, drums, and myself.
Yes.
But that lasted, well, it lasted all the time, except not the same fellas. We had to change from, well, some people would go away to different jobs, others wouldn't be satisfied with. Because there again, I was never satisfied. That's good.
You know? So were you always like Glenn Miller, striving to get that unique sound?
Well, yes. Glenn Miller, I didn't know very much about at that time. You know, it was, there were different bands on the circuit, and you'd listen in with the earphones and the Cat's Whiskers radio to the Savoy Hotel in London. Carol Gibbons and his Savoy Hotel Orpheans.
Yes.
I was listening there up in Irishtown, the late Billy Reedy, he was talking at the chapel there. He had a big side of a tea chest in the sink on the wall to give it the, get the earth attached to the tap. And we all got around this and listened to it every night at, up to 12 o'clock.
About your 50th performance down, or 50 years in the business and your celebration down in Circles, that must have been a great thrill for
you. That was a marvellous, an absolute marvellous night there.
Yes.
But all the people now that we were speaking about there, Mrs. Ryan was talking about in the 1947 ballroom dancing class, and around about that time, they all came back, every one of them, you know, and it was a reunion of reunions. In Clonmel that particular night. Well, there were supposed to be 800 tickets or something, around about that.
Yes.
Which they couldn't turn them away. They came in busloads from places 30, 40 miles away, and they couldn't turn them back.
Yes.
It was ticket. It was supposed to be ticket only, but it was a fabulous night.
Have you any plans to repeat that?
Well, we have a repeat. The committee down there decided on having once a month. I wouldn't think once a month would go very well. So I decided that we'll have another go on August Monday.
Right.
The bank holiday Monday. We'll have a repeat.
Well,
they did have Whit Monday in mind, but unfortunately we're in town. We're in the GEA club on the Saturday, or is it Sunday, I think, and somewhere else, so that we couldn't. It would be too much in the one place and one weekend.
Thank you.
1983, Tricia Cantwell and Mick Delahunty had a piece of music recorded with the main man himself and his band in Circles in Clonmel of that year.
Every day for everyone, CBC.
Well, by the end of 1988, by the time the station closed down, there were four of us in full-time employment at the Westgate. Peg Power, of course, was our station manager. She took over after Jerry Gannon left for Australia. Jimmy Williams, who looked after news and sport and did a bit of production work and looked after his own show at lunchtime. Patricia Corbett, of course, was our secretary. She looked after the accounts and made sure that the payroll was up to date and general meet and greet. And of course, myself, I was the advertising and production manager at that stage as well. Of course, there was many others that were involved in the station, but they were all on a part-time basis. And some, of course, were just voluntary. Too many to mention. But, you know, you need the backbone of a community station. You need people to be there looking after things. It was a fun place to work in, as I recall. I mean, lots of funny incidents happened, and some things we can't mention because even though back in the day you got away with it, people might be still embarrassed, so we won't mention it. But there were one or two things that come to mind. For example, Michael Reel, God rest him, was on air one day, and he played a request for a couple. This poor couple had been married for about 20 odd years and they hadn't any children. And of course, they eventually were blessed with the birth of a baby in the hospital. And the family, of course, sent in loads and loads of requests for this couple. And Michael played a request and he decided to play Big Tom. And the song was, "How Many Times Does It Take to Get It Right?" Of course, that was a real facepalm moment, let me tell you. Dry scripts, of course, were, you know, there would be a bed, piece of music, and then the presenter live on air would come in and would mention what was happening in a particular event. And there was a famous one for the Care House Hotel when the presenter came in and said, you know, on Friday night, we're going to have Jimmy Buckley playing in the front bar. And then on Saturday night, it's Ditto. That's Ditto on Saturday night. They didn't realise what Ditto actually meant. Again, one of those facepalm moments. Lots of tricks were played on air on people, you know. The listener wouldn't have known, but, you know, you'd have your racing results. And while you're reading the racing results, somebody would slip page three, girl, down in front of you just to make you laugh. Or what was worse, and quite dangerous now, thinking back in this PC time, somebody would set fire to the racing results. And that did happen. Somebody came into a box of matches, you're reading racing results, and they started like you were kind of hitting the page, get out. So kind of silly things like that. But we, you know, you'd have guys pulling the chair back so you couldn't reach the microphone while you were live on air, or hiding under the mixing desk. You'd run out to maybe nip down to the loo while there was a record on. And when you'd come back, somebody would have hidden in under the desk and they'd wait for you to actually go on air, and suddenly you'd feel somebody grabbing you by the ankle, which would frighten the bejesus out of you. But again, all in good crack, and we knew who we could do these things to and who we couldn't. I remember one particular story that Rory Walsh recounted to us, a Saturday morning show he was doing, and he played some fantastic music. He said he did some great links. Everything was coming across really well, really proud of himself, really good show, probably the best he'd done in a long time. And someone walked into studio and said, "By the way, Rory, you do realise we're not going out on air." Transmitter had gone off and nobody heard him. But that was a fact of life in radio back in the day. Hickey's Bakery, just under us at the Westgate. I remember there was a big fire in Hickey's Bakery around 1985, 86. And we were standing up on the Westgate all looking out the window as the firefighters were actually walking along the roof. Massive, massive blaze. But on a happier note, Hickey's Bakery, of course, is where we used to get our buns and cakes, and as well as O'Gorman's Bakery, another place we used to go for our cuppa and nice cakes. And at Christmas time and times like that, you know, free buns. I was a pretty skinny lad at the time, but I did put on a few pounds in my time working on the Westgate. And I have to mention, of course, the late, great Phil Egan. She was a great friend to the station. And every year at Halloween, she would make the most amazing Halloween brack. And she would deliver it up to us, and we would have probably, weight-wise, probably a pound and a half of brack each to take home with us, because the bracks were massive. You used to take nearly two of us just to carry it up the steps, but great, great memories indeed. And one of the saddest things, of course, I suppose, was turning on the radio on the 1st of January 1989 and turning the radio dial and starting at 88, and the only thing you could hear was RT Radio 1 and 2 FM and nothing else, just a hiss and silence after that. And that was kind of poignant for us. That meant our days in radio were well and truly over until licenses were launched later that year. But, you know, good days, good fun, lots of good friends made. And in general, I think we did a pretty good job.
$20 and he laid that money down. And he called out to a taxi cab, take me down to Central Park and keep that meter running to the $20 mark. And he kept his eyes turned forward and he sat up straight and tall, and no one even noticed him. No one cared at all. It's a fine, fine day. Kind of crazy when he called. Him and my old man would stand and whisper in the hall. Then they'd disappear and maybe not come home at all. Then one day Sonny stopped coming around. Heard he got himself into a little trouble out in town. Sometime after that he finally disappeared for good. When he pulled that old Houdini like we always knew he would. It's a
Well, we did promise you one or two songs from the original archives of CBC, and that was Tony Carey and a classic back then called It's a Fine, Fine Day.
Pirates in the Westgate.
It isn't very often that you get to hear from a local man who is an Irish national champion, American national champion, and an Irish and American record holder. Then again, there was only one Ballinacurry here. John Joe Barry.
You're very welcome back. John Joe Barry is my guest this afternoon. John Joe, before the break we were talking about all the things that your mother warned you about, and of course these were the things that you seemed to go in search of once you landed in America, weren't they?
Well, it looks like that, although for a while, for about a year anyway or more, I was I was quite a normal and didn't get too excited about life over there, although I was studying the possibilities.
Yes.
And observed what was going on, and said to myself, one of those days I'm really, you know, going to enjoy myself and let my hair down.
Mm-hmm. And when did that day dawn?
Well, it dawned actually before I planned it.
Yes.
I had the fortune or misfortune of becoming the American national champion before I ever entered Villanova.
Yes.
And the first day I arrived in Villanova campus, before I was even assigned my room, I would honestly admit to you that I had a swollen head. Because the job of an American coach is to make you, train you to become an American champion. Mm-hmm. And then eventually an Olympic champion. But that only happens in a very few, you know,
yes.
Very seldom. But here I was now. I had all those Irish championships behind me, Scottish and British, a world's record holder, now the American national champion.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, what the hell is this coach going to show me?
Yes, see? you thought you knew it all.
I thought I knew it all, mm. Yeah. And it didn't take Jumbo, the coach, to realize that I thought I knew it all.
Covering events outside the studio setup was a real challenge, depending, of course, on where the event was taking place. If it was near the West Gate, then a single cable was run from the premises to the main studio mixer. If it was far away, a small transmitter or telephone line was used. Or, as in this next piece, a person knowledgeable on the subject was sent with a Superscope tape recorder to cover the event and have it broadcast later. This is such a recording from 1986, when Ruairi Walsh headed to a crowded Clonmel Arms hotel to report on the 25th anniversary celebrations of Sean Tracy, Ciarán Cúrla and TD.
Of course, with me now is the man of the moment, Deputy Sean Tracy. Sean, congratulations on 25 years in Dáil Éireann. The first question I must ask you, does it feel like 25 years?
That's the amazing feature of it, that it only seems like yesterday. Memories come crowding back of the days gone by, and I can vividly recollect all these various incidents, and it just seems like yesterday. This is the worry about life that passes by so fast.
Well, you must agree, life hasn't passed you by all that fast, and that as a politician, as a TD, you've been very successful.
Well, thanks to the people. Thanks to my own people here. I could have done nothing without the confidence they reposed in me. Without vain boasting, I worked very hard for them. I was never elated by victories as such. I've had very many victories in my time, but I was always more concerned and more humbled by the responsibility this entailed, and consequently my desire to serve the people to the utmost of my ability.
Looking back over your 25 years in Dáil Éireann, what for you was the highlight of your career? So far, anyhow, not that it's over yet.
Well, there were very many highlights. I suppose being elected Ciarán Cúrla was certainly a great honour. It's certainly one of the most prestigious jobs in this country, and they tell me I did a good job, that I was a good Ciarán Cúrla. But apart from that, I think the feeling that one retained the respect and the confidence of one's electorate is the greatest joy of my life.
Nissan Classic 1986 rolled into Clonmel for a stage finish on O'Connell Street. Anthony and Dick O'Gorman led the race into their hometown to a tremendous applause. And Sean Kelly took fourth place after a terrible fall 2 kilometres from the finish. An amazing achievement. A whole team of us were sent to various locations to bring the excitement to those at home who couldn't make it to see for themselves. We remember that day in a recent chat with Richie Anderson.
There was one big, massive sporting event that we covered, and that was the Nissan Classic.
Oh, that was 85, 86?
We're debating that, actually. We think it was 1986.
It would have been, yeah. And, of course, I was the guy with the mic, and you were the runner, and you were told, right, as soon as they pass now, John, you get the numbers. And did they pass you fast, John, did they?
I saw nothing. I know a little bit more about cycling racing now, and one of the things is keep well in, because they can pass really, really quickly.
You can bet your life. But we had a great view of it. Well, we were on the street in O'Connell Street.
We were,
but the guys in the studio had a great view, because they were looking straight out from the West Gate down the middle of O'Connell Street.
Certainly so. And I remember...
Rory was doing... he was anchorman.
Rory was anchorman. Yeah, we have actually audio of that. And we had set up a CB network, because back in those days, there was no mobile telephone like you have now. Mobile phone, you can phone from anywhere in the country. And we decided, quite a lot of us that were involved in CBC at the time had CB radio background. Michael Delaney, Eddie Gentles, Brendan O'Driscoll, all the gang. We got CBs all around from Carrick and Shore right the way through to up the V, actually.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
And we had various people in various spots. And we had a network set up to relay and then plugged into the mixing desk. And it didn't go... on the test run, it worked perfectly.
Perfect.
But for some reason, it didn't work.
5 minutes before the off.
5 minutes before... it was chaos. And I remember, we actually have the audio of it, where Rory Walsh, who was anchoring from the studio... A couple of the people were actually in phone boxes. I think Patricia Messenger was in a phone box...
At the Mall.
Brendan Manley was in
Kilsheelan. Michael Delaney, I think, was up Dempsey's house, was it? Up the mountain road.
I can't remember now where he was, but we kept relaying and calling them, and you will hear on the audio where Rory is calling Michael. Michael, can you hear me? Come in, Michael. And there's no response from Michael. We'll go to Brendan. Brendan, come in. And you'll hear it on the audio. It's actually, looking back, it's quite funny. But for a budget that we had...
£50.
£50 at the time, which probably in today's money would maybe be 200, 250 euro.
Probably, yeah.
When you think about it.
Yeah.
And if somebody said to you tomorrow, can you do a full outside broadcast to cover an event, there's 250 euro. Most radio stations would laugh at you.
Exactly.
And say you won't get 5 minutes on air for that.
Yeah.
But it was Kelly Coalyard, Richie.
Kelly Coalyard, that's right, down the quay.
They were on the quay.
And they sponsored it. And what we did was we got sandwiches made. I'll remember.
Not this. 50 quid's worth.
Not 50 quid's worth, no. I don't think we had a few pints over either, had we?
We might have had a glass of lemonade or two.
Well, Peg was looking after the money, so we had nothing got to do with that. Peg Power.
she was the boss.
She was looking after
station
the money.
Manager at the time.
She was, yeah. Well, we had sandwiches made for everybody. And where the headquarters of the Nissan Classic outside Brockers was, where Lifestyle is now, which was Brady's.
In O'Connell Street.
And we had to go upstairs after doing the show. And who do we meet upstairs? Only Jimmy McGee. And I suppose we got talking to Jimmy. Food came into the conversation. But they had nothing to eat since the time it started in the mornings. So you're talking RTE, Channel 4, Eurosport. All this crowd were there. So John and Richie decided, well, it's okay, lads. We'll get you something. So we got back to the studio, brought out a kettle of tea and all the sandwiches, and we fed.
We fed the crew.
Yeah.
And bearing in mind, this was in the days when people from RTE and from the national stations weren't allowed to even fraternise with people from the pirate area. We would be blacklisted, and they would be blacklisted if they had anything to do with us. But Jimmy McGee didn't. That didn't bother him.
That didn't bother me. If they were hungry, it didn't bother him. You can bet your life it didn't bother him.
And a pure gentleman he was. And he met you a few years later.
He met me. We did the
Nissan Classic. He met you rather than you met him.
Yeah, exactly. In Heron's Hotel, the Nissan Classic was there some years afterwards. And I was going up the stairs. I was to interview Sean Kelly, Adley Van Der Poel, Stephen Roach. But I remember going upstairs to meet Sean, and Jimmy McGee was coming towards me. I said, hello, Mr. McGee. And he says, hello, Mr. Anderson. He remembered me after 2 years.
Richie Anderson remembering the memory man himself, Jimmy McGee.
As social events go, the Clonmel Person of the Year Awards, sponsored by the Clonmel Express, was a gala outing of the year held annually in the Clonmel Arms Hotel. This competition saw the public nominate someone in the community who deserved recognition for their charity work, volunteering or business promotion in the town. Another event this time broadcast live on CBC. Here are Patricia Cantwell and Billy McClellan speaking back in 1988 about the proceedings.
I think one of your highlights, the highlights of your career here with CBC Radio, certainly has to be the Person of the Year Award. I think you did them 2 years running, was it, or 3 years running?
2 years.
2 years.
Yes. Oh, that was sponsored by the Clonmel Express.
That's right.
And we held it in the River Room in the Clonmel Arms. And I remember the first one. And you were involved in that too. You produced the programme.
Mm-hmm.
I presented it. Peg Power was involved. There were some technical engineers down from Dublin, if you remember, to make... I don't know why they were there, but they just appeared. They were there, and The programme went off very, very well. I remember one TD coming in, and he said, by God, he said, I've been listening to this coming in the car, he says, and it's only powerful stuff. The Clonmel Person of the Year Award is discontinued now.
Which is a shame.
It is a shame, because there was a great magic about it. And I'm not saying anything against the other hotels in Clonmel, but there's something about the River Room in the Clonmel Arms. There was a magic there that night, and Jerry Gannon was just getting in to video cameras at the time. We must mention Jerry Gannon. And he was filming the whole thing, and we didn't know whether we were on television or radio.
That's right.
And I was asked to look up at the camera, and I realized I had a microphone. And it's a very awkward situation where you're trying to talk to a camera and talk to a microphone at the same time, because on television people see what's going on radio you have to describe what's going on.
Mass has been held at the Holy Year Cross overlooking Clonmel since 1950. In the mid-1980s, some decided it would be a good idea to broadcast it live on the radio. If they said it couldn't be done, we knew the man to get the job done. Here's Richie again.
We decided we'd do Mass from the Holy Year Cross. So we spent the whole week, God be merciful, Eddie Gentles and myself, we spent the whole week running cables from the end of the road as far as Dempsey's house, which we connected up the telephone wire from there. Got from there to the cross. Joe O'Malley had a generator up there. And Father Michael Kennedy was doing the Mass. And we got that. I was actually in base. I was speaking to him at the cross where they couldn't get her from Morton Street. But we could get her from Woodsgate to the Holy Year Cross.
Amazing stuff. And I remember somebody telling the story about Eddie quite literally climbing through bushes and brambles to get that cable.
Don't I know it? And Dallas has to buy me a red jumper. I'll never forget this red jumper. And I got stuck in thorny bushes.
Mick Delahunty regularly played in his hometown. And on St. Stephen's Night, 1982, Tim Cooney went along to Circles to chat to some of the revellers.
And we have himself here, John.
How are you, Timmy?
How are you, John?
Not too bad, and yourself?
Are you enjoying Mick Delahunty tonight?
I am.
Good, big girl.
Join us.
Who would you like to say hello to, John?
I'd like to say hello to all the staff in Mid-Ice.
Yeah.
Wish them all a happy Christmas and prosperous New Year.
You were out in some part of America.
I was out in Oregon for 4 weeks, in Medford, Oregon.
How did you like it?
Very nice out there. Big timber country out there. We had a wonderful time out there.
What exactly were you doing, John?
We were learning all about the product we're making down in Mid-Ice.
Was that so?
Which is medium density fiberboard, something like a chipboard.
Yeah.
And we had to learn all the techniques in making this board.
The tricks of the trade, is it?
All the tricks of the trade.
It was a good experience, wasn't it?
It was a great, fantastic experience.
And a kind of a holiday at the same time.
Yes, and I enjoyed it very much anyway.
Great, John. Thanks a million for talking to us. Thanks a lot.
CBC, remember
we remember back to time spent in the West Gate with current CEO of Radio Kerry and one-time presenter on Radio Carrick and CBC, Paul Byrne.
What I remember most about CBC in Clonmel is the location. The West Gate was fantastic. I remember doing programmes there when the Christmas lights were turned on in O'Connell Street. And because the studio was up so high in the West Gate, you're actually above them. And you could do a programme and look down on the entire scene underneath you, which was just fabulous. I remember the lighting inside in the studio, which was unusual for its time. There was two tracks of lights and there was different colour bulbs which were on switches, so you had red, white, yellow, green, and you can mix and match the colours. So whatever humour or mood that you were in when you're in the studio, you could put the lighting on to suit you. The other thing that I remember about CBC is the great fun we had. I mean, you know, like, it was only regulated at the time, and let's face it, at the end of the day, CBC was a pirate radio station. And because of that, people were able to kind of do things that they can't do today. So they were able to develop themselves, they were able to experiment, you know, and they were able to have fun while they were doing it as well. Some unique things that were there as well. I remember Johnny Williamson was a presenter at the time, and one time he played a record which actually was scratched. And he made such a big deal out of it that he became a regular feature on his programme. The Scratch Record feature was on the programme every day. It was a great place to work. It was unique. It was in the middle of the town. There was a great spirit amongst the staff that were there. And to be honest with you, because it was on medium wave, everybody in the town listened to it. It was Clonmel's local radio station long, long before local radio station came into the country. And I remember when the location for it was picked out, I remember being up there when the aerials were being put up on the roof of the West Gate and stuff like that. A guy called Liam O'Keefe down in Carrick and Shore did the aerials, and I remember being up on the roof of him, and he had to climb up a pole, add another bit, climb up another bit, add another bit. It's pretty scary stuff, I'd have to tell you, at the time.
Sadly, as the years roll by since we left the West Gate for the last time, we've lost many colleagues. Far too many to mention, but there are some I feel we must give an honourable mention to. Terence Sweeney, a.k.a. Ian Scott. Terence had an amazing radio talent that most of us just dreamed of. He could switch on that magical voice at will and had a fantastic memory and knowledge of music. It is true to say that his first love was always radio.
Michael Jackson and Rock With You, it's 9 minutes after 8 o'clock. And don't forget, we have four more star signs coming up for you at 8:31 this morning. We've got for you Cancer, Leo, Virgo and Libra. Okay, that's Cancer, Leo, Virgo and Libra. And they're coming your way at 8:31 this morning. And at 8:15, we've got the nap for the day.
Eddie Gentles, the man you called when you had a technical problem. Eddie always had a solution, be it as unimaginable as running a cable most of the way across town so that we could broadcast election results from Our Lady's Hall in Morton Street, or running a phone line from the Holy Year Cross through Bush and Bramble so that Mass might be heard on the radio. Eddie would do it. Impossible was not in his vocabulary.
It's 5 minutes past the hour. My name is Eddie Jensen. Opening the show there, that was an artist I haven't played before. I've heard him before, but I never got around to playing him. That's the Ray Conniff Orchestra and Chorus and the ABBA hit, Fernando. That was, I say, Fernando. Here's one from the Everly Brothers.
Liam Clooney. Again, a man who relished being on air and was always in top form. He loved his folk music and introduced many of us to bands and singers we had never heard of. And if you needed a book to be reviewed, Liam was your man at a minute's notice.
Some nice folk music between now and 7 o'clock. We're going to have one or two phone calls. And I believe Ken Horn and Paul Byrne are coming in for a wee chat. Now, this is a record that I started my show with all of 2.5 years ago. This is A Day Trip to Bangor.
Leamy Doherty, or The Doc, as he was known to many, a proud Carrick man who did many shows on the station. In fact, he was so popular that we gave him his own breakaway network just from Carrick and Shore in the afternoons from 3 to 5.30. Again, he was a showman, and if things went wrong on air, his true professionalism came out and he would remain completely calm.
One thing I must say to you, I haven't very much time because I believe I was supposed to be over in Hillview Tennis Club. And I thought I was playing from 11 o'clock until 2 o'clock.
Mm.
But now it seems they're looking for me over in Hillview. So I hope that everything will be all right over there, that they won't hate me when I go over there. But I thought it was 11 to 2, so I can't delay to me.
Right.
Tommy Cunningham, our studio engineer and friend, a man who looked after the presenters who didn't feel confident to run the desk or who just had too much to do on a particular show. Tommy was also a roadie for many of us. Too young to own our own car, he brought us the length and breadth of the country and never complained, even if four of us and a lot of disco gear was trying to squeeze into his small car. They and many others will always have a special place in our memories. Even though we were pirates, the record companies would send us on some records from time to time. And that is the case with the next song we're going to play for you. Yet again, it's the original vinyl from the days of CBC, taken out of the box, dusted down, cleaned off, and recorded especially for you. Here's Minor Detail, and this is called She's Back.
She's been- Thank you.
That just about wraps up this trip down memory lane for those of us who remember that small radio station with the big heart that brought so many of us together. And I'm glad to say many of us are still good friends after all these years. Our thanks to Tim Cooney for the many tapes provided to help make this show possible, and also to those who shared their memories with us. And our thanks also to Mark Whelan on production and for the use of his studio, West 10 Audio Productions.
We will finish by leaving the last words to Peg Power, Timmy Cooney and Noreen Butler as they said their final goodbyes to the CBC listeners on December 31st, 1988.
And now, Timmy, we're coming to the final minutes of CBC, and after 7 years, it's a sad day for us. But we knew from the beginning in 1981 that this day would come. We're all very grateful to the people who set up this station in the first place and provided a local radio for all of us, for the whole community. If they and people like them hadn't done so at the time, perhaps the powers that be would never have got round to legalising the whole situation. You've heard the name Jerry Gannon mentioned many times today. It was his enthusiasm that was responsible for the setting up of the station, and with the other 16 people who were involved, they did a good job, I think. They set up a service of a very high standard, and we've tried to maintain that insofar as it was possible for us to do so on a low budget. In an area of low population, as we live in, finance is limited. But our aim has been to communicate with you, to keep you informed about what's happening in the area, and to entertain you, and to strengthen the spirit of community among you. I've been with the station since the beginning, as a presenter first of all, and for the past 5 years as station manager. And I must say, I am a little bit proud of what was done here on CBC. I'm very proud of the people who we have had here, and of the people that we still have here. People with real talent. We were lucky to have them in our community. My thanks to all the people whom I've had the pleasure to work with here, and I wish them all success in the future. For many of them, I know that their future will be in radio, and that applies not only to those people you've heard on the air, but to those people behind the scenes, those very dedicated people. My thanks to them. Thanks also to the business people of South Tipperary who have advertised with us, especially in the early days, when it may not have been all that popular to do so, and they may have had their doubts. You may not realise it, but we here at CBC have become a very close-knit group of people. And tonight for all of us is the end of something very special. We'll miss each other, but we're hopeful that we will perhaps work together again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks to you, the listeners, because without you, we would have had no business in being here. I like to think that together we opened the door to local radio in our area. We've shown that it can be done, and I hope, please God, that this closing down tonight is only the getting ready for a new start to local radio in South Tipperary.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's about it from me and the end of my 7 years here on CBC Radio. Well, without taking too long, I'd like to thank everybody associated with CBC. I'd like to thank in particular Jerry Gannon, who was in Australia and allowed me the time to broadcast here. I'd like to thank Peg once again to all the lads here in CBC for their help and dedication. I would like to thank the people that helped me here on the programmes. I would like to thank all the business people that have given us prizes and all these, the various people that contributed to the programme. There's an awful lot more that I could say. I haven't got the time. All I can say is, God bless you, lads. Thanks for everything, and I won't ever forget you. Thanks a million. Goodbye, and God bless you.
Shindera Leshna Chlorica and Octo Radio CBC. Agostera Leshna Chlorica Galer. Tasulagam Gamimeresh Arish Sublime Shakuing. Ogaklina Ansa, or Radio CBC. Slonga Fall, Agaspana Ferret.
Westgate, the story of CBC Radio Clonmel, written by John Ryan, presented by John Ryan and Jimmy Williams, and produced by West 10 Audio Productions, Clonmel.